Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me, as always, is Thomas Brooks.
Oh, hello. We did it. We're back. We're alive.
And I got it right, thanks to you.
You did.
It's been 6 months-ish.
Yeah. We've taken a little bit of a breather, a break,
yeah.
A step away, a sabbatical, if you will.
Partially by choice, partially not.
Academic work is crazy.
Yeah, I think by October we decided, oh, it's by choice now.
Which is fine. We're not paid to do this, so.
No. So for any first-time listeners, for old listeners who are coming back, to remind you who we are, I guess we should introduce the podcast and ourselves. We're a book read academic podcast where we usually pick something, textbook, whatnot, and we go through it over the course of a semester, about 16 weeks. We're going to do something a little different with this kind of like extended season that we've got planned. That's kind of gist of what psychosocial distancing is, was, will be. I don't know.
In perpetuity.
When we finish, we'll pass it on to someone else, and we'll see if someone else will keep it going. I don't know.
It'll have to be through blood curse.
We're cursed to complete this podcast.
Yes,
in perpetuity until you pass on the blood curse to someone else.
Yep.
I'm
so
leaving that
is written,
in.
So shall it be done.
So I guess to introduce us, I'm Dr. Daniel Chadbourne. I'm the psychologist, and I study fan culture, the internet, community, folklore, whatever I find interesting. I don't know if it's, I don't know what's up with my either rapid fixations to other things or hyper fixations on something. I'm sure it says something about me. There's a clinician out there who might be able to give me more information. But that's who I am.
Response.
Yeah.
So I'm Dr. Thomas Brooks. I also study the internet and fandom, but I also study things like human sexuality, gender, and relationships, and trauma specifically. Not that I'm diagnosing you, Daniel, but you know. That's pretty much me. I run the Human Connection Lab at New Mexico Highlands University, and those students keep me on my toes and keep me working constantly.
Yeah, I was trying to say, I'm not sure what we call my lab. It's just like the social cognition lab or something. It's just my lab. So I run that
lab.
The lab. I run that lab. So
the lab.
And once we get that website up, I can put the links to that if you're interested in the stuff that we're doing, if you're interested in the work that's going on. We'll plug it. I'm terrible at self-promotion. Might as well start now.
Yeah, might as well plug things we don't get paid for.
Right.
Like, the topic of this season is the book we don't get paid for.
Yeah. So we are two of the four authors, kind of the last but not least authors on The Cape, a multidimensional model of fan interest. That is going to be the purpose of our season. We are going to do a book read. This is the Psychosocial Distancing Book Club.
Huzzah.
Way too many chapters. There's going to be a total of 31 episodes. 32?
Nice.
33. So we have an introduction and a conclusion. We're going to do 33 short episodes, hopefully, on talking about this book. We're going to take it chapter to chapter. We're going to do an episode per chapter. And if you're just listening to this and you're like, hey, there's a new episode, I'm interested in listening to this, then you need to stop, go to the link in the description, and get the book for free.
Yes.
We don't get paid for it because the book is free. You can get it in print through Amazon, though you just pay for whatever it's going to cost to print. I think it's like $5.
Five or $6. It only charges to print it.
Yeah. You go download it for free. We'll have all those links. Read. I mean, they're very short, or they're pretty short in all things considered. the introduction, and then come back and listen and talk to your, I don't know, phone or whatever. You know, send us a message and tell us what you think. We'll probably have done this entire season by the time we get anything. If we get anything. Yeah, and so we want to talk about fan interest. I still can't tell you what CAPE stands for, but I know each letter. Oh, you've got it?
Yeah, no, I need to figure it. Wait, do we get it? Duh, 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 duh. Oh, nope. That's a conclusion. C stands for conclusion.
Oh,
commitment.
Yeah, I found it too.
Asset, presence, and expression.
There we go.
Yes. So,
it is an 18-item scale, which is included in the book. And basically, the construction and formation of the scale kind of comes out of the history of fan studies, fan research, and psychology.
And beyond, really.
And beyond. Yeah. This was and still is the most... I wanted to use the word aggressive thing I've ever written, just in terms of like the sheer quantity of stuff that was thrown at me to consume and digest and put into some usable format.
No, it was a total fever dream. Like I was in the process of moving to New Mexico while I was writing this. And like, we both wrote 8 chapters.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
We don't have our names on those chapters in the book, but when we get to them, I'm sure we will recognize them as the ones we wrote. I couldn't tell you which ones I wrote. I think I did. Yeah, I'm not sure which ones. I'll have to double check.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up my CV because I have them written down. I wrote chapter 4, making meaning and making, chapter 5, direction and guidance. Chapter 9, novel experience and sensation. Chapter 10, escape. Chapter 11, eustress. Chapter 12, emotion. Chapter 14, loyalty. And chapter 24, exclusivity and focus. And that was a lot because they're short chapters. And that's the one thing that any reader delving into this book is going to see is like, oh, this chapter isn't that long. I can get through. It's like 4 or 5 pages. It's really kind of dense. Like it gives me a lot of this information. I probably read 100 articles a chapter.
Okay, I have mine. So I did 13, materialism and collecting, 16, uniqueness, 17, creativity, 18, aesthetic, 19, knowledge, 20, self-esteem, 21, desirability, 22, economic motivations, 25, self-disclosure, and 27, pathology. So, I was kind of the biggest thing about this book was that despite the fact that they were all in fan studies generally, like the specific subtopics themselves were not necessarily like interrelated. So, like a single lit review for a chapter would likely not share articles with another chapter.
Yeah, they're all so distinct in terms of mm-hmm. I think, again, very few things, unless we're talking about like big picture stuff like the Ryson and Branscombe or the Juan and Branscombe stuff, which kind of like
Jenkins article.
Yeah, some of the stuff that kind of does supersede throughout this, but for a lot of these, every citation in a chapter is very likely to be exclusive to that chapter. Mm-hmm. And I, like I said, like, I mean, I might have started with like 100 articles, narrowed it down to 50, and then like gotten it to the point by writing and condensing and organizing. You know, I might have ended up with 30 mm-hmm. in a chapter, and a chapter that's like 5 pages,
right?
It was, and then everything else, I'll mention everything else were written by our two wonderful colleagues, Courtney Plant and Stephen Ryson. They wrote everything else. Courtney put it all together. He's amazing. when it comes to just sheer production of work and writing. And the goal of this was just to condense as much research as we could find, to also condense the research that had been published and had been done on this model of fan interest and this scale, and then to just put it out there for everyone to have. Not for profit, but just sheer sharing of academic knowledge. And like, there's part of me that's like, man, it would have been really nice to make something off of this, but for the work that went into it. But it's definitely like a almost like a passion project, or a project of love for fan interest studies, or fan studies. There's just so much information in here.
I think we share this from what I remember, but I particularly enjoyed writing this book because, like, we were both in a fandom, fanship, fan studies lab in grad school. But neither of our theses or dissertations had anything to do with fan studies.
That's true. That's
so
true.
I never actually got the experience of, like, massive hauling a, like, literature review for the lab for my dissertation or anything. And so I did appreciate, like, getting to graduate and then write this thing. And that way I left, like, not only do I know, like, method and practice, but now I know, like, the literature in the field more.
I'd like to say that I also had that experience, but in between graduating and writing this book, I also put together and helped organize a third of the Brony psychology book, so My Little Pony psychology fandom, and also the anime book, which I wrote like a third of those chapters. So I there was some of this stuff that was very old school, you know, old to me. Like, I was like, all right, I can write a chapter on this because I've written about it before. I do love the I'm like, I'm cited in here somewhere at the beginning in the first Chadbourne et al. 2017 for this fan motivation skills, one of my first publications, that, like, I've been writing about some of this stuff for a while, especially the meaning stuff. It's really interesting. I can't wait to talk about it more. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff. Like, again, like, my dissertation was on social identity and locus control, which the social identity stuff is tied, but I wasn't looking at fans. I had written some stuff here and there with fan studies, but nothing is comprehensive, because again, this is a book that revolves around the psychology of fandom, but it is not a psychology book, because so much of this stuff is tied to, like, the literature, the leisure research and the fan studies research, and business and marketing, recreation, travel, all of these other fields, communications. It kind of just all comes together. And we are writing it as psychologists. And it is heavily influenced through this sort of psychological lens. But there's just so much that goes into fan studies. Like, again, like, when we say we read everything, for the listener, when we say we've read everything, you know, we will get to the meaning chapter. I may have read, up until the point we published, every article that had mentioned the word meaning associated with fandom, and at the very least had to go through them to see, are they actually talking about what this chapter is supposed to talk about? And so at least filtering through probably as far as I could bear to go through Google Scholar and other places, in addition to the articles that we had already collected.
We have seen the triple digits of the Google Scholar pages.
Yeah.
It's a dark place.
So many tabs open, so many articles saved. I think I have a folder still somewhere. I think I downloaded the full folder because Steven sent us that folder to start with. And he's like, here's the start, see what else you could find. That thing was...
And the starting folder was like 1,000 articles.
Which I had to go through, or I would like type in the find to search through it, because it would search the PDFs for words and try to find every article. And then everything left over, I'd have to go and manually sort myself. Yeah, that was probably the first several weeks working on this project, was just organizing.
Yep.
And then it was writing, and then writing, and reading, and reading.
And more reading, and more writing. Yeah. So, I guess we should answer before we close out, because we spent a minute talking about the process of writing a book. Do it at your own risk.
But yeah.
What is a fan? Like, when we say we wrote a fan book, who are we talking about?
Well, I mean, I like this bold prediction that we start with. You're probably a fan of something. Are you interested in something? I mean, that's a fan. No one can tell you if you're a fan. You just are, or you aren't. I mean, some people might gatekeep and say you're not a fan. But you are, or you aren't. You either like something or you don't like something. You're invested in it. We'll kind of get into different ways, because there's not one kind of fan, right? There's 31 chapters in the book, so 31 ways that we can kind of talk about how people engage with their fan communities. And here's the Ruggeri 2020 study that found that U.S. adults spend an average of 20 and 38 hours, so in between 20 and 38 hours a week, on their leisure activities.
Okay.
I'm trying to think, like, is there something I spend that much time on? Probably play some video games.
The thing that I might spend the most time on, yeah, like I play Minecraft every evening, but I play for like maybe an hour before bed, an hour and a half to two. So that's like 14 hours that I spend on leisure, like explicitly leisure activities.
Probably play more than that a week, because there's some days where I'm just like, I'm done. I'm just gonna immerse myself in this game. I do a lot of like organizing and like deck building with Magic the Gathering, and like I could sit down and just lay out cards and like try new things and just like sort through everything that I have, and like that'll just, and I'm like, oh, it's like 11:30 at night, like I should probably go to bed. I've been sitting here for like 2.5 hours on the floor with my cards everywhere trying to organize something. But it's a great like decompression. Like, it gets me out of thinking about other stuff. It is kind of one of those leisure activities, even if I don't play as many games as I like to.
Are you still playing D&D every Sunday?
No. We kind of took a break. One of our members had a kid.
Fair. Yeah.
So it's made it a little more difficult.
IRL, not in the game.
Yeah, IRL. Yeah, just to schedule time. It is definitely on our radar. We do every now and then, like when we have time, we pick up a game or we play. I'll eventually date this, but I've gotten really into Baldur's Gate 3.
That was
one of my birthday Christmas presents. And I waited, because it had been out all last semester. I could have started at any point last semester, and I waited like a good, responsible adult. And then, like, I didn't do anything for like a week and a half over break, because that is all I did. So, like on average, maybe 20 hours a week, because there's some weeks I don't engage at all, and there are some weeks where that's all I do.
Right.
I want to.
Yeah, I would say in terms of like behavior, I think most of my fan interest goes into Minecraft. But I have like tertiary interests, which is why I like the Ryzen Branscombe distinction between fanship and fandom. Because like I find a lot of things interesting and I enjoy them. So like I like anime. I'll watch anime. I watched a great anime recently. But I'm not gonna talk to anybody or identify with other people who like anime. Like, I'm gonna like, you know, get home at the end of the day, turn on my fan servicey isekai reincarnation anime, have a nice time for 24 minutes, and then I'm booking it. And so like that distinction I particularly like that comes up quite a bit in this book is between fanship and fandom, and that fanship is like, how much do you connect with the interest itself? And then the fandom aspect is like, how much are you connecting with other people about this interest. And so, like, even though I'm like regularly watching anime and like playing Minecraft, I don't do it with anybody else besides my husband, right? So, like, I don't know if
Yeah.
my fandom's not terribly high there.
I mean, I would almost argue that even with like Magic the Gathering and D&D, like there are a select few people that I do play with. Most of them are faculty. I don't engage with people outside. I read some stuff and I keep up with some news, but I am not like going to conventions. I'm not posting online about it. Yeah, and like anime is a great example of that. Like there are a lot of anime that I like. I am not having in-depth discussions with students or people online about anime. Or even
And if you're
you.
going to an anime, yeah, we don't even talk about anime.
Right. Yeah, we
If we're
and
going to an anime convention, it's because we're going there for work.
we're collecting data. Yeah,
And maybe like one or two plushies.
it's probably been like I do buy stuff. Like I do consume. And even beyond just like kind of like normal consumption, like looking for like novel things or like I've got this wonderful, can't really see it here. I got this wonderful little Mothman plushie, and that's like tied to a podcast that I listen to. And like I really enjoy the podcast. I'll buy and buy their merch and support them. I don't talk to anyone about the podcast. I don't engage with their subreddit. I don't do anything with it. And it's like, yeah, like I'm a fan of a lot of things. I'm in probably no fandoms
Yeah, I would
anymore.
say that I'm not in any fandoms either. And I think that might be kind of like, at least for, well, not even just for me, because like I've always been kind of suspicious of like groups of people, like as far as I can remember. But like, like when people get together in a group, like shenanigans happen. But I think also working in the fan lab
Oh,
really
yeah.
was like, oh, okay, like I know if I choose this, these are the outcomes here. And like being an out, the outcomes of fandom are not bad usually, but like also I think I took too much of like a third person look at it that I can't like, reorient to being first person again.
Yeah, I think I stopped being a member of any fandom probably at the point that I joined the lab. Like that was probably one of once I re well, it was probably a little bit before that because I was doing some fan study stuff prior to that. But there was probably this tipping point where it was like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore. Like I just can't engage like I used to because I'm reading about it and I'm studying it. I would even say with like my fan interests, like I think I have more disposable income now, so I feel a little more confident in like buying a dumb plushie or something like that, to support or just because like I like this thing, I'm gonna buy it. Like I can, but I do try to like temper myself because like if I think if I wouldn't have studied fandom, like I'd probably have a problem with Magic the Gathering because it's like a drug. But like
We have a shared colleague that it certainly is a drug for.
and I mean, I'm not like great with it, but I do like balance myself. Like I'm like, this is my rule. If I'm gonna go buy some cards, like I have a budget. I don't spend too much. Every now and then, like I get something big or I get something nice, but for the most part, like, I keep my collection completion aside to a minimum. Not zero, because I just can't. My brain doesn't work like that. My brain sometimes needs to complete stuff.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of like it's to, and this is like jumping a little bit, but over towards the end of this introduction where they kind of talk about the magnitude of fandom and how it predicts like consumption behaviors, right? And so people who identify as like big fans of things tend to like engage in content generation, official merch, unofficial merch, and spend more of their time and money on stuff. And so there is kind of like this tempering that like identification level is probably really good for your pocketbook.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say, like, well, I'll talk about this more next episode too, but like, there's also this, like, it kind of, it's like a double-edged sword. So the more you identify, the more you want to consume. And then the more you consume, the more you start to identify because you have all this stuff that like helps reinforce you being a fan because you have all this niche stuff. And then something new comes out and you're like, well, like I got this stuff. I need this stuff now. I mean, it's capitalism 101.
No, this sounds like a capitalist trap.
Yeah,
Like
oh, it is. It is. It's terrible. It's our old nemesis.
is. Ah, the return. Which,
Before, oh, go ahead.
to the point of our like vast disciplines and the book even brings this up is that like this research is very valuable for marketing and economic scholars. Because like if you can
I read
round
a
up a bunch
lot.
of people and like tie their self-esteem and group identity to your product, like you got them hooked.
We will get to brand loyalty at some point. I wrote that one because I remember reading a lot about it. Yeah. Oh yeah, it was yep.
To be fair, though, like I am like terribly guilty of brand loyalty at in like some
Absolutely.
instances. Like my husband bought me a plushie garden gnome with the Whataburger on it, and then I have a little hat with the Texas flag, and instead of a star, it has the Whataburger on it. So I'm like,
Whataburger is a Texas thing. It's kind of like a Texas thing though, right? Like that's
yeah.
I've heard it almost like it's stereo. Like I know there are Whataburgers elsewhere, but like they ain't no one who
It's a
appreciates a Whataburger like a Texan.
Yeah, no, it's real bad. Like they played their marketing game real strong. But yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anything in particular that like I'm super like there's just things I like. Like I like Lego. I still like Lego as an adult. That's a I, like Magic there. It's a dangerous interest to have because I'm looking at some of my Lego in my office and I'm like,
Ooh.
I don't want to talk about how much I spent on that that set. For that reason, but like I wouldn't have bought that set 10 years ago, right? Like, because I would have at least had some insight to be like, I cannot afford that right now. And it's like a sparse thing. I try to think if there is anything like super particular.
We had a running joke on the podcast a while back because I was always drinking Shinerbock while we were recording. And you don't want to know how much Shinerbock's in my pantry right now.
Mean, you've kind of sold me on Shiner Box, so
That's good beer. It's
it's
good
good
beer.
beer, yeah.
It's great
Yeah.
to cook with.
I have learned, and I mean thinking about this as a fan, and maybe I'll try to remember to kind of bring this up as we kind of talk about this week to week. I also think that like studying this and reading it and understanding it is also really helpful when like everything goes awry with your fan community. I cannot list. I mean, I turned 40 last year. And over the course of my
Big
life,
4-0.
I have seen the rise and fall of many different internet personalities. Like, since I started really consuming internet subculture when I was in high school, it was like really when it was starting to like start. I know some good old school memes and videos and stuff like that that people talk about, like, this is really old. And I'm like, I was in high school when that was happening. But there have been last year was a weird year for some internet people that I follow. And I will say being able to like not be so consumed with like the entirety of like internet fan culture, its toxicity and stuff like that has really made it kind of easy for me to like go, you know what? I don't have to watch that person anymore. I can just walk away. Or, wow, these people are being really toxic, it's really not going to affect my ability to watch this person because I like their content. And there are plenty of actors and other people that I watch that I think aren't the best people, but like, it's a good, you know, it's a good anime, it's a good movie, it's
so you watch it.
You know, I can watch it with ad block on and feel fine. But yeah, wow. it definitely has made me feel like, because I've seen, because there's been a lot of like, I mean, I'm gonna guess it's only gonna get worse and worse. A lot of reactionary stuff and a lot of like internet drama that spills out. But it's been really kind of fascinating, like having to like step back and like think and like, ooh, like this is a person I followed for like 5+, you know, 10 years almost, and they're quote unquote getting canceled. I mean, they're back now, but they're quote unquote getting canceled. Or like there's a bunch of drama, and it's easier for me to be like, okay, I'll just walk away. Or I'll make an ethical decision on whether or not, like, you know, or I'll see where it goes, and until it hits some point where like it seems super serious, maybe then I'll like make a decision on it. But like, I'm not getting angry about it. I'm not getting like upset. Yeah. I'm not posting on Twitter or whatever it is.
Right. X.
Yeah. So I'm not going on Reddit and complaining. Just move on with my life. And like, I am healthier for it.
Huzzah. So I think that's an excellent sell for why our good listener should read this free book that we spent a lot of time on and are about to spend a lot more time on.
Yep.
Because it will help you maintain a healthy relationship between yourself and your fan interests, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. That's not the intention of the book, but it could be a fun byproduct.
We might get to this someone. I want to end with this question. Are you an anti-fan of anything? Or a non-fan, I guess, would be easier, because there are things you're not, maybe probably a non-fan of.
So an anti-fan being, I'm a fan of not liking something. There's something I don't like that I really like not liking.
Yeah, like you almost take pleasure in like the drama or the hate or something.
Okay, Freud.
Yeah.
What's something that I can't stand?
But you can't get enough of. Because like that's got to be like, that's kind of a true anti-fan. Like you can't stand it, but you can't help but consume it.
Okay, here's a weird thing I do. I have never seen from start to completion a single episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. I don't particularly care about the franchise whatsoever. I think RuPaul can take her money and keep fracking in Wyoming for all I care. But I will watch the heck out of a commentary channel on RuPaul's Drag Race as the season
is
running.
There you go.
I know nothing about, like, it's literally just a critique on what the queens were wearing on the runway at the end of this, like, the episode. I don't know anything about nobody on no show or season, but I know every single thing they've worn all season.
That is me and like pseudoscience channels on YouTube, because I refuse to engage with any of those channels. But I will watch the hell out of some commentary about those channels, picking them apart and making fun of them. It is my guilty pleasure. That and Magic the Gathering, because they ain't no one who hates Hasbro as much as people who play Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons. And
fair.
I will eat up, I will read about it, I will not engage with it, but I will eat up the drama. And then I will continue to compulsively buy Magic cards.
I don't know if that makes us anti-fans, though. I think that just makes us like conflicted fans.
Yeah, I mean, because I guess we're not a fan of those things, but like, because I maybe I'm a fan of the people who make fun of it or the commentary channels. It's a weird thing, but I mean, I guess that's part of it. Like, I mean, because anti-fans are people who like will go out of their way to like bash a community, So yeah, maybe I'm not a, because I won't put anyone down. And we had a lot of conversations about pseudoscience where I'm like, yeah, this thing's weird, but I can kind of understand why people do it or why people believe this way. I don't necessarily,
Maybe
I don't hate the people.
I have like a not to get terribly controversial, but we are back with episode one, so I need to say something controversial. Maybe I'm slightly high in fanship for the anti-fandom around Kamala Harris.
Ooh. So you're not a
Like,
part of the fandom.
I'm not a part of the anti-fandom. Like, I'm not like, retweeting and posting and things like that, but just every now and then I get a clip of Kamala Harris speaking at a public event, like she just dropped acid like 2 hours before, and I just love it. And I love the people who like sincerely like that woman, like squirm in the comment section about it. It brings me some joy.
Like
I will
Kamala.
never cause that pain, but I do greatly enjoy watching
I could see that. Yeah. I'm probably like that on a lot of
her brain melting
politics.
out of her ears as like the edible kicks in.
Yeah, I love weird, like, because, like, I mean, politics is just fandom, right? Oh, I'm gonna link this because one of the grad students sent this to me. It is a Vox article called "If you want to understand modern politics, you have to understand modern fandom." So I will link this with this episode. I will try to remember to link this with this episode, because yeah, and that's also why you should stick with us and read this book with us and go through chapter to chapter, because like you can understand the world by understanding the social identities that people have around these subcultures and these groups, and it will then bleed into everything else.
Bleed. Generalizable knowledge. Woo.
So yeah, so I guess with that, because I could probably talk for another half an hour on this.
But we shan't because we have 33 episodes to talk forever about this.
Right. So we will see everyone in chapter one. And so
Huzzah.
until then, till next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.